Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, I'm up back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tamale, Mr. Lou Michaels. She's Jay-Z back on the board. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed as she is every Thursday morning, aren't you, Jay-Z?
Always.
Always, yes. You'll be, by 7, you'll be there. You'll always, you gain it, you know, it's okay. You know, you're a hard worker, you're young, you know, you have several jobs, you're doing things well. So, Lou, what do you think?
I think she needs better drugs.
Yeah.
I second that.
Yes.
Coming from Denver.
coming from the marijuana capital of the world. By the way.
Well, it's marijuana and mushrooms now, man. They legalized mushrooms, psychedelic mushrooms, or there's a psychedelic element to some kind of mushroom extract, and they've legalized that within the city. So, you know, when people tell you marijuana isn't a gateway drug, it at least in the legal sense, it appears to be a gateway drug.
I would say that every vice, for lack of a better term, if some politician thinks they can get money for it, they don't care what you do. I mean, how you kill yourself, basically.
Well, I'm not sure that. I mean, with dope, that was clearly the case, but I'm not sure that's the case with mushrooms. It's not like you've got a giant, pro mushroom culture demand sitting up there, and that you know, Mexican cartels are importing truckloads of fungus to overwhelm our young people. I think it's just I think it was Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the former senator from New York, who talked about defining deviancy down, and you know, as you accept behavior that was once considered, you know, socially or culturally deviant, as you accept that behavior, you lower the bar for what is considered deviancy. And so now that marijuana has gained widespread cultural acceptability, you know, now what's the next, what's going to be considered, you know, deviant behavior now with respect to drugs? Is it heroin? Is it fentanyl? Is it some other, you know, some other kind of dope and recreational chemistry, and where does that line go? And I would suggest that once you accept recreational drug use in some capacity, that the bar starts dropping, and you know, once it starts dropping, it's sort of like your position on chemically enhanced athlete performance. You know, once you accept, in your argument, once you accept that people will take aspirin or caffeine, then what's the difference between that and, you know, steroid use or blood doping or whatever?
Well, it does tend to creep. You know, it is interesting. You brought the mushroom thing. I was probably, when I traded in the OEX, now we had, you know, 350, 400 people that traded in there. And everybody has their, you know, for lack of a better term, I say a 10-year age slot, what people did at, you know, when everybody was young and, you know, your steps were quick and light like a rock, like the commercial said. Somebody actually, young Jay-Z, asked me the difference, in my mind, the difference between, I would mention when I was in school, I mean, virtually everybody I knew was this is right after the Vietnam era. I mean, virtually everybody I knew was a toker, at least my class. The guys younger, no. There was so much marijuana paraphernalia, and me were tripping over it. There were harder drugs. There was psychedelic stuff. There was the LSD, of course, and mescaline, that kind of thing. And then you had your uppers for people who wanted to do all-nighters.
Let me ask you a question, because this is actually coming up now in employment law situations. Did you ever see guys on the floor using drugs to enhance performance? I know cocaine was a substance that people thought, okay, I can take this stuff and it's going to improve my sharpness, my mental alertness. Did you see people taking anything else on the floor?
Some guys, if they were if they were out all night, they'd wire themselves up a little bit. Take some speed.
Well, I'll tell you right now that this is rapidly becoming a thing. In first place I saw it, or I noted it, was in Silicon Valley, but which, go figure that the Haight-Ashbury region would begin to spawn a culture of taking prescription medication to improve performance. But there's a wide variety of prescription drugs and stuff that's illegally available that is being used to enhance mental performance by young and middle-aged employees. Everything from Ritalin and Adderall, the ADHD drugs, which allegedly improve focus.
Your male enhancing drugs are used for physical performance, not because it doesn't just enhance the blood flow to one spot.
Oh no, I know. But I'm talking now about mental performance.
Yeah, I think so, the Ritalin stuff is that's a dangerous. We have to get him back on. Dr. Johnson Blade, my buddy, roommate from college, would say that those kind of drugs, the danger, Lou, is that if you have the certain chemical imbalance, this is according to him, I'm no psychologist, if you have the chemical imbalance for which the Ritalin and the Adderall work for, he says it's almost a silver bullet of psychology. I mean, they work very, very well. But if you don't have that imbalance and you're quote normal, whatever the hell that means, and take it, is a total different. You can get high. You can think you're thinking better. You can do all those things. That's why the kids in high school try and mug the kids that actually need it.
They sell it, and you've got people getting this stuff legally from their physicians who they tell them, look, I need some help. I need some focus. Do you think this would work? There are other drugs, and I don't have the names at handy reach in my mental cabinet. Maybe I need some Adderall.
Yeah, you need something.
But there are other drugs that actually mimic the effects of cocaine.
Try some Viagra. Go out and throw the football around. See if you can still throw it.
This stuff is pretty is rapidly getting used.
Maybe I'll ask Mark if he'll come in next Thursday, because he. These are strong drugs. Let me get back real quick to my story about when Jay-Z asked me about the drug culture, for lack of a better term, when I was in college. The difference, Lou, and again, my whole thread of thinking, I mean, you think of everything as legalities and right and wrong, and I look at things and how the numbers push people. When I was in college, there was no, that I knew of, there was no what you call big money pusher. Somebody would, if you wanted some marijuana, you went out and bought a pound, and I don't know what you paid for it, say $50, or it was more than that. But say it was $100. Essentially, cut it up in 16 ounces, you'd sell the 14 for the $100, and you got two for free. You could buy a lid for $20. So there was no big money in it. There was no Mexican cartel on the top. There was nobody owing people money. There was nobody getting shot over it. There was none of that that I saw. Now maybe further.
Well, correspondingly, the quality of the dope wasn't that good.
No, it's terrible. You post in Indiana, if you wanted to, you could go out and drive along the side of the road. They had so much growing wilder. This is a long time ago. Back when they have hemp farms when the army
hit. During the Second World War. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is now when you move up the chain, I never saw heroin and I never saw cocaine in 4 years of school. I mean, which I consider to be. The there's a despite what a lot of, you know, you may be right that things walk up the chain a little bit, but to me there's a massive difference between something that is physically addictive and something that isn't. I mean, if you and I had surgery and ran a heroin thing for a week, we're in danger of becoming addicted. We're not in danger if we smoke dope for a week. We might decide we like dope, but we're not physically. There's a massive difference, Lou, I think. You know, I mean, I've read studies with crack cocaine. You could put a monkey on it for 4 days and he's hooked.
So the question becomes with this new stuff, are you looking at a generation of people or a group of people who are using?
What do you mean new?
Things?
We're back to heroin and cocaine.
Yeah. Do they get psychologically hooked on it? I just think there's an acceptance of, you know, kind of use of psychoactive substances that is there, that, you know, I just, when I was in high school, the idea of taking a drug to, you know, that just, you know, a prescription drug to improve your mental performance was viewed as fairly risky behavior.
Oh, God, yeah. I don't think it is anymore. But we were in high school, they thought if you studied for the SAT, it didn't do you any good. There was nobody that had those enhancing programs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you mentioned the mushrooms, when I went down to the trading floor, I never saw any mushrooms either. Because, I mean, so they totally passed my group, for lack of a better term. But all the guys at the trading floor, most of those guys were 10 years younger than me. Because I went out and had a job in the real world, and they didn't. They went straight to the trading floor. And
since you seem familiar with it, what do you do with mushrooms? Do you smoke them? Do you chew them? Do you mix them in drinks? What do you do with them?
These guys, Lou. First of all, remember the Seed? Remember that publication? But you can go in a lot of, well, in those days, the publications, like even the Chicago Reader and places. And if you knew the lingo, you could order up mushroom seeds from people. Psychedelic mushroom seeds. You probably can get them today. Probably go online, and I'm sure if you know
mushroom,
what you're doing.
Mushrooms come out of spores.
But I'm saying these are particular mushrooms. They're not the kind you eat for dinner, Lou. But so you
what do you do with them?
So you plant them.
How do you get the psychoactive effect?
That's
psilocybin or whatever it is.
There's like 90 bazillion types of mushrooms. That's why you can't go out in the woods and just pick them and eat them. You're liable to kill yourself.
This is where I'm revealing myself to be like the most unhip square individual.
You better not be naked and afraid either, because if you grab the wrong mushroom, you're toast.
Well, it's psycho. You know, it's a psychedelic. So
half of them are poisonous. Half of them you have for dinner, and then there's some are psychedelic. So there's huge grades of mushrooms. So the guys in the pit that were into this, when there was no trading, they'd be telling me how there were certain kinds of mushrooms that were just unbelievable. And they would grow them, for lack of a better term, because they're not really a plant. They'd grow them, and you'd freeze them. And they'd said some guys, they do, you open up the freezer, and there's 100 bags of mushrooms in there, there's not even an ice cube.
So I'm of the opinion that the vast majority of people who chewed on these things were you know, getting a sort of psychosomatic effect.
They thought they compared placebo effect.
This is going to make us high, and then you know, you think it is, and because you do it, it is.
There's drugs in there. They said it was the equivalent of you'd hear the American Indians would peyote or something. They chew peyote and they get high.
Well,
some people say they get reasonably high in a Cuban cigar the first time you.
I'm kind of looking at this from the perspective of you know, again, social behavior. But as it seems to me, as we grow much more tolerant of this kind of thing, we start spitting off tolerance in a variety of directions with respect to drug use and artificial stimulant use or depressant use. But apparently this goes way back. There is a story, and Jess may be able to find it, that kicked out about 2 or 3 weeks ago about a discovery of a pouch, maybe 3 or 4,000 years old, that contained a variety of plant, residue that was, you know, had these kind of psychoactive elements. They think it was the bag of like a shaman or a medicine person. But apparently people have been experimenting with this stuff or whatever for, you know, a long, long time. And this goes back again to my, you know, the first guy that discovered that you can eat an artichoke. You know, how do you, How do you find this out, number one, and how does this stuff get memorialized, number two, and then how does it spread among cultures, number three?
Well, my brother is an expert on beer. He likes to brew beer, you know, legally in his home and so forth. And he will tell you, we should have him on someday, Lou, because he loves to talk about it. Brewing beer goes back thousands of years.
That might probably be our most popular show. We probably have people joining us rather than dropping off on this discussion of you know, common drug use.
But it all comes down to the money. But Dan will say that beer is very difficult to make. I mean, it's like a six-step process. It's not something you'd walk out of a cave and figure out. I mean, but look at what your life was like in those days, Lou. I mean, you mean
Neanderthals? Because,
no, I'm saying even in the Dark Ages. Okay, I mean, when you talk about people coming,
Chief, beer goes back to Egypt.
I understand that. What I'm saying is, what if you were American Indian? How many injuries do you think you get per day? And if you messed up your leg with nobody to set it, what do you think life was like for the next 6 months? I mean, the thought that these guys wherever if anybody found anything to dull anything. To dull any sort of sensation that they would be all over, that doesn't surprise me.
That's probably true. The other thing, of course, is that, especially in you know, again, the Middle Ages, they discovered that a light or mild alcohol of some kind, whether it's wine or beer, was just about the only effective way to guarantee that you were drinking water that wasn't going to poison you.
Well, yeah, so, sure. Hey, we got a question. Let's continue this one second more, if you don't mind. My concern with, you know, Illinois is about to go legal with recreational marijuana.
You guys are going to legalize heroin if you can.
Oh, but they'll do anything for money here. If they can tax it, they'll do anything here. But my concern is, where is the adult supervision anywhere in any of this stuff? I'm going to say, Lou, that first of all, nobody likes, and I've been a trader my whole life, and I'm not going to equate that with gambling, but some of the stuff on the trading floor, the rush down there was sort of the same as it was, you know, if you're playing poker at the racetrack. And I learned to play poker probably before I was five. I mean, my family loved to gamble. And you know, my mom was a terrific bridge player. She was a great poker player. She'd go to Vegas. She'd sit down with five shills and hold her own when she was 70 years old, and they all knew her, and nobody messed with her. And she wasn't, you know, a pro or anything, but she knew her stuff. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, Lou, yet I also know that if Vegas had a unique situation, you or I, because you wouldn't be into something like this, you're too straight, you'd get on a plane, it was all you could drink on the way out, didn't have to go through security, you already paid your way back, you bring whatever you could bring, $1,000 with you, which is a lot of money in those days, and I never lost more than $300-$400 because I'd get pissed if I was losing, but, you know, and you'd have go see a couple of shows and you come back, and it was a nice 4 days. And Vegas had an unusual thing because they didn't really have to deal with any of the mess. Vegas was a small city at the time, a couple hundred thousand people. It was nowhere near a million. It wasn't a million in the state of Nevada when I started going out there. And but now gambling here in Chicago, here in Illinois, there's all this crap. And I'm going to be blunt this morning. All this crap about we do this to catch people from other states. Lou, there's been study after study after study, and most of them are old now. 80-90% of all, except for Vegas, or maybe Atlantic City when it opened, like 80-90% of all the money you make is from local people.
Sure it is.
And you know, even though the morons will tell you that it's not, they'll lie to you just like, you know, whatever. I don't know what we do about that, Lou, because you go to the, I mean, Audrey and I once in a while go to the Pepe's out in Homer Glen, and you sit down and they've got five of these poker machines. Sure enough, you know, one of the waitresses will get off a shift in the dining room, and she'll make $100, and she'll go in and she'll blow 50 on the video poker. To this day, Lou, I don't think we care. We've looked at the end of the day. If you look at all the social issues that this creates, are we gaining or losing? And my signature example is I used to live at 70 West Senior, and the good boy, I'd always take my mom out to breakfast every Saturday or Sunday, whenever, and I'd be leaving early, drive to the south side. The same black dude, not that he had to be black, but he just happened to be, truth, would walk in, we'd be working the streets, he's got $20, he'd buy a big quart of Coke, two things of Doritos, and 17 lottery tickets. And I'm thinking, this guy is the highest marginal tax rate of anybody in the country. He doesn't,
sure.
And he doesn't even know it. I mean, if you walk into these places with the big spinning wheels and all this stuff, it's not just the lottery and all these other instant games. It's always, not always, it's generally minorities. It's generally people that have no concept of how to figure out the odds and no idea that they're getting ripped off. Now, do we think that at the end of the day...
Isn't gambling not taxed? If you buy a lottery ticket, it's like $5.
Well, no, it's taxed if you win.
Oh, okay.
It's not taxed if you lose. It's totally a tax if you lose. Then you tax again if you win.
if in fact you win the lottery, don't do anything before talking to Chief, okay?
Yeah.
Just based on that comment, all right?
First of all, if this is how... We had a guy. He just happened to be a guy. Kathy got him on. He was a Illinois lottery critique guy. And he hated it. He would write articles about it. And of course, he'd get nowhere. But if you say the lottery says it's $100 million, Jess, and you win it, it's not $100 million. It's $100 million over 20 years. Now, if I did that at PTI...
Although you can take a lump sum, you can take a discounted present value.
But okay, so it's really, today, it's $30 million. Or 40, or whatever the hell it is. It's not 100. But now, there's no way on earth that I could have that advertisement out there for PTI or anything like that. Because there's no way that's truth at all in advertising.
This goes back to the original point about defining deviancy down. We accept, the only place gambling used to be anathema. You know, the only place you could gamble was Vegas. And it was a very questionable activity. The pro sports leagues were death on it. Anybody tainted with, association with gamblers or people who knew gamblers, was somebody you didn't want to hang around with, somebody that was unemployable. Now, as we creep in with state lotteries and other measures of social approval, we now find that gambling is everywhere.
Lou, if you, I would not accuse you of this because I know you don't, I need to take you around a little bit. I know you're a little too straight.
Unhip. The word you're looking for is unhip.
When you talk about the leagues, especially the National Football League, essentially aghast at this gambling, Lou, you've made a million remarks since you've been on the show, and I'm going to say 99% of them you've been flat on. This one, you are so far wrong, I can't even... The thought that those people say that who's the numbnuts as the head of the thing, the commissioner, for him to say that, I almost fall off my chair.
No. I'm saying it used to be that way. Who were the two players? We're a little memory lane trip here. Who were the two players suspended for gambling?
Alex Karras and Paul Hornung.
Paul Hornung was one. Who was the other?
Alex Karras.
Yep. So. Who do you think?
Refresh me on it. I don't think they were gambling. I think they were seen with a gambler, consorting,
they were associating with gamblers.
Yes,
that's right.
I don't think they ever saw them.
If they'd been found to have been betting, it would have been probably a lifetime ban.
Yeah, they were like having drinks with some guy who was a gambler. Like
let me just believe me, I knew the hypocrisy well because my dad the pro coach. I'll never forget, we were watching one of the rare Sundays where they didn't play. I think it was a Thanksgiving weekend, so they had played on Thursday. We're watching the games on Sunday, and Brent Musburger's on with Jimmy the Greek.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah.
And so Jimmy the Greek was a gambling, quote, odds maker. Talking about point spreads and things like this, and they had him on, and I remember my father saying, how the NFL tolerates this. They talk to us about gambling and associating with gamblers all the time. The NFL comes out and tells the coaching staff this, they tell the players this, and then they turn around and align themselves with this guy. They allow their league to align themselves, their broadcast people to align themselves. He said, we are going to be betting on, we're going to be having sports books,
Well, Lou, I think some of the world...
It's been going on forever.
But I think some of the world now has gotten into... they're into these... what do you call them? Where you pick your own players and so forth.
Fantasy leagues. But that's been a financial savior.
Well, but I'm saying if you were to go back to 15 years ago, you walk into Tripoli Tap on a Sunday, and let's assume that the Boston's not playing, the place would be mad with Boston. There would be 25 to 50 middle-aged to older guys in there, and they're all watching, and all of a sudden you see eight guys sitting, hovering around the Seattle Ram game. Now, who gives a crap about the Seattle Ram game in Chicago? You can best assure that every one of those guys has money on that game. So if you think for a second if the NFL ever thought that the odd game that didn't include your hometown team wasn't being watched in a lot of situations because people had money on it, they're out of their mind. Talking about two sides of their fence.
No. It's been there forever. I mean, the horse racing and boxing and whatever are the old ones. The ones I
Lou, hold that thought, buddy. S&P futures up 10.50. NASDAQ futures up 27.75. Looking back, I'm going to get Lou's legal opinion on the Trump tweet yesterday that flipped the market 60 points and how many people front ran that one. I mean, this is getting so old every day. I got 4 phone calls immediately when that happened. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering 3 research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than 3 decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Will Michaels, UJZ. On the board, Jessica Zalewski. S&P futures up 10.50. NASDAQ futures up 27.50. Dow up 75. Big turn on the market yesterday on the tweet from the president and gang regarding the... He's going to wait for a while on the tariffs on automobiles, right when the market was down and flipped it the other way. And I still am having this mental conundrum as to whether I'd rather they be so stupid they don't know that there's a market move over there and aren't trading it, or whether they're so immoral that they are trading it. I honestly don't know which is worse. I guess we'd have a vote on that, but I'm not so sure that would do much good. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 90, that's 0.75%, FTSE up 19.2, CAC around up 19.4, so muted, but all to the upside. Nikkei down 125.6%, Shanghai up 17. They're pushing close, well, they're over 2,900, 2,955. Hang Seng up 6, which is down here, which is flat for those guys. 28,275, whole number. Oil up 67 cents, that's a whole percent. Brent up 62 cents. RBOB gas back up over 2,204. That's a big move in there. We've got gold down 360. Whenever the market goes up and everything's bright with the world, the gold goes down and the other way around. Very, very strange stuff we got going on here. JZ, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Looks like it's nice out now.
Yep. Anyway, good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. Weather in Chicago today is partly cloudy, but expect rain later today in the evening. Today's high is 78 with a low of 50. Phoenix is mostly cloudy today with a high of 90, low of 61. In baseball, the Cubs lost to the Reds 6-5. Sox were off, and the Diamondbacks beat the Pirates 11-1. No accidents to report. Back to you.
So, Lou, we have this recreational marijuana, and again, for a guy who just contributed to Policeman's Memorial Fund and whose dad was a policeman, I'm going to say anybody... I don't know what kind of rose-colored glasses you put on when you become elected in this idiotic state I refuse to leave. If you look at the carnage and the roads here, and you drive around and you see people flying by at 100 miles an hour, and there isn't a policeman anywhere. I know they're all heroes. I've heard that. Everybody's a hero. They're all going straight to heaven, but the fact is they're not doing anything regarding police work. Especially if you're on any of the expressways, but how do we introduce a new drug, which let's say it's something like alcohol, and there is no test for it, there's no anything. The last thing we need is the idiots driving 100 miles an hour by me to be munching on a marijuana cupcake.
First of all, it's a marijuana gummy bear.
Whatever.
Is what you're going to hear. This goes to an issue that is surfacing now, especially in employment law. With employment law, how do you tell whether somebody's impaired? And of course, we can detect marijuana use, historical marijuana use, back as much as 30 days, and even longer than that. If you
got long hair, I think it's about a year.
If you do things like hair samples, you can go even further back, although you can't tell exactly when it was used.
Right.
So the question, if you're an employer in a state like Colorado, becomes, when are you presumptively employing somebody who is impaired? And because we don't have a cutoff for marijuana. I mean, in the military, when I was prosecuting drug use offenses, there was a cutoff for drug testing. The U.S. military instituted mandatory urinalysis testing, I think in the 1981 time frame. Over 20% of the service force was testing positive for marijuana or cocaine. But there was a cutoff. You know, if you tested below a certain threshold, and for marijuana it was 100 nanograms of tetrahydrocannabinol per milliliter of urine.
We're talking THC.
If you tested below that level, then you weren't considered to have a positive test. Most employers, at least before the advent of legalization of recreational marijuana, most employers were firing people for positive test results in the, you know, in the 10 to 15 nanogram per milliliter, you know, right at the edge of what testing could detect.
So you're talking about if a guy's toking up on an elevator, you're flunking your test.
Well, that's right. The 100 nanograms per milliliter was designed, again, to counter claims of passive inhalation, because we were criminalizing this, so there had to be an intent element there. So to get 100 nanograms per milliliter in your urine passively, that is, by not smoking a cigarette, you pretty much had to put your face over a bale of burning marijuana and inhale it. Or you had to eat, brownie made out of like nothing but dope. But now we don't know. And so are you impaired at 100 nanograms per milliliter? Are you impaired at 30 nanograms per milliliter? Nobody really knows. But I will tell you, if you're, for example, a trucking company and you are running, you're running trucks through states where people could use recreational marijuana, and your guy has a terrible accident like happened out here in Colorado 2 weeks ago, where you kill four people and you destroy 15 cars. If you have an accident like that and the guy tests positive for marijuana, you know, how much he's actually got in his system disappears in terms of legal consequences. You're going to be, when you go into that civil lawsuit, the allegation is going to be you had an impaired employee who was driving that truck, and therefore you're liable.
I got a question for you. This is going to call from some speculation on the witness stand. How many people in Colorado, I know a lot of people are eating this stuff now rather than smoking it.
Sure.
But how many people in Colorado who's have friends and so forth that are pretty much into it would test positive tomorrow for at least a little bit and wouldn't even know it, that have never actually done it themselves?
I don't know, but we are seeing a huge spike. Well, the state police are seeing a huge spike in what they consider to be impaired driving, not drunk driving, impaired driving, as a result of marijuana legalization. And they are seeing a huge spike in overdose cases, especially among teenagers, but also among older, you know, older adults, because of the edible situation. So I don't know how many people are showing up with this or would show up with traces of this stuff in their system. But the prevalence of the edible marijuana is a huge deal here, and it's a fairly insidious kind of effect. You have to really, as I understand it, you have to really be careful, because
we have
the stuff doesn't have an effect right away.
Let's say we have a serious friend of the show. I won't say that he's a producer, who was in Colorado with some people, and the danger of, say, getting a brownie, and the instructions or the dosage, for lack of a better term, is, you know, dose half of brownie, and you eat half, and it's not like smoking it where you get the...
No, and, you don't get a high. You won't get a high for hours.
Well, I think the story I got was about a half hour, so like anybody else coming from anywhere else, especially if you're young, you immediately wolf down the other half.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden, 5 hours later, you're like, okay, I'm ready to not be high anymore, and you are. and it lasts like a real long time. And I've talked to probably five or six people in that age group who have gone to Colorado, and every one of them gave me the exact same story. with their first experience.
There's a famous column by Maureen Dowd of the New York Times, and again, Jess could probably find this, where she talks about basically getting one of these edible marijuana products. And you can get them in a variety. I mean, brownies are, I don't even know if they sell brownies, but they do sell things that look like Tootsie Rolls, and they sell gummy candies of, you know, bears and whatever.
Some is good, more must be better, as they used to say on the trading floor, Lou.
Yeah, well, if you, this Ms. Dowd ate, something that looked like a Tootsie Roll, but, you know, each segment on one of these chocolate bars, these candy bars, each segment is a dose. So, of course, she ate the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and ended up in a psychotropic, you know, coma kind of thing, where she was curled up on the bed for like 24 hours crying in her hotel room. And it's a real issue. And so how do you know when somebody's impaired under those circumstances? You eat something like that, you're going to show positive, even though the effects may be over in 24 hours. You're going to show positive for a week.
The economic term for this, Lou, and it goes back to one of the most simple yet an incredible pieces of paper, or several pieces of paper. And the guy just died, by the way. He was like 95. This guy named Ronald Coase. He ended up at the University of Chicago. He started out in Britain, I think. Wrote a book on the something called an economic externality. It's a cost you can flip on other people. And it was so simple. It was about a factory moving into a city or a village in Britain, Scotland or some damn place, and how when the factory started belching out the smoke, they didn't know anything about cancer or any other kind of stuff. People dying, so they didn't know anything about it. It was how you had to whitewash your house every 3 years instead of every five, and how the company didn't come up with the difference in money, because any cost you can flip on other people. And right now, the states are looking to get money for this, and anything that lands, any increase in hospitals, any increase in dented fenders, any increase in anything like that, they don't care. That's a cost that's going to be borne by somebody else. And they're going to give you some total BS about how they're going to save $50 million for if you have Harris Casino, you got to say if you've got a gambling problem, blah, 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 blah. You know, we come back, I'll tell you about a gambling problem we saw, and then we'll talk a little bit about what's going on in Washington. And by the way, I need your opinion on the Persian Gulf and what the hell are we doing
over there. Let's talk about it.
Up 10 and a quarter, NASDAQ up 24. Be right back. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here in our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomashi, Jay-Z on the board. Mr. Lou Michaels as well as SP Futures up 9. Still up pretty good. We had Cisco earnings came out. Cisco's up $1.84, trading 54.28. It's trading 51.40 yesterday, so it's up like $3 in one day. We had Walmart earnings came out. They beat on the bottom line, didn't beat on the top line, but they're still up $1.56. Everything's kind of turned since yesterday. Lou, real quick, Audrey used to live in this condo unit, and there's this couple that was downstairs, and they're older than us, but Audrey's friends with everybody, for God's sake. So she and the lady were reasonably tight, and so I'd go down there once in a while, and we'd go down and, you know, have a beer with the guy, watch the ball game. Decent enough guy, factory worker kind of dude. You know, he'd get up at 5, and it was one of those old kind of things where she'd get up at 4 and give him the full breakfast and the whole bit, and dinner was on the table when he came home, you know, back like things were in the 50s. And all of a sudden, one day, the guy is gone. Like, he's just gone. Like, God, where the hell is he? What do you mean he's gone? Didn't come home. And can't find him, doesn't show up. She doesn't know where the hell he is. He's worked for like a few weeks. Evidently, he started gambling and gets in one of these, you know, the week-long motels and the no-tell-motel joints. Oh, she goes to the bank. All that's cleaned out. The life insurance is cleaned out. And the guy kept thinking he's going to get it back. Finally, he's found, like, dead in a hotel room, in a motel room. And then, like, a year later, she dies. And I think Audrey and a couple other ladies ponied up money to get her in the grave. I mean, there's stories like that all over the place. And you think, you don't think our governor wants to talk about those. And there's no money coming from any of those taxes or the earnings anywhere. They're just going to pay people that we hire. You know, I'm getting so bitter at this, Lou. You think that you're going to be right wing? When it comes to this stuff about people drawing paychecks and not doing anything, and then living high off the hog for the rest of their life while the rest of the people are trying to pay for it, I'm getting so tired of it, Lou. I can't even. I'll make you know Till the Hun look like he's liberal on this stuff. I mean, I bet you never thought you'd hear me say that.
No, I mean, we've talked about this. I was looking at the fact that Chicago, the report yesterday that came out, that Chicago has the highest, I think it's the highest debt burden per capita of any city in the United States, over almost $120,000 per taxpayer. The next closest city is New York, and it's $85,000 a taxpayer.
Yeah,
I mean it's insanity. And it's unsustainable, and it's one of the reasons why, even though I love Chicago as a city, and I think it's a great place to be if you're made of money, it is unsustainable in an economic sense, as is the state.
Right.
And so I want, there's no mystery as to why Illinois is losing people, hemorrhaging people, and jobs, and industry, because of the price, and most of it, I think, is related to the price of corruption.
We're gonna solve it all with the incredible increases in title fees, driver's license fees, gas tax, more tax. We're gonna do more and more and more. Lou.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's, right. You and I have had this discussion. I will note that Illinois the bluest of blue states, is now inexplicably taxing electric car owners $1,000 a year, right? It's $1,000 a year?
Oh, no, that's a bill that has not been passed yet.
Oh, it hasn't been passed. Okay, no. So that's the proposal.
All right, so real quick, before we talk about the Middle East.
Come on, man, what are you doing?
What do you do if a guy with a Tesla doesn't buy any gas, and that's your revenue for roads?
Yeah, and so...
The answer is not he's not free. That's not the answer.
Well, I mean, apparently not, and apparently the response is that, irrespective of the fact that we should be encouraging, or that you would expect a blue state to be encouraging, quote, environmentally friendly, unquote, modes of transportation, this is a direct slap at people. We're going to get our revenue from it, even if you're smart enough to avoid.
We got to talk about the Middle East,
but to pay it.
Right. So tomorrow, everybody's electric. Nobody buys any gas. That's essentially the sole source of revenue for roads. Now, what do you do?
You figure out some other way to support the roads. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you've got a toll system there that is taking in gazillions of dollars. And that money doesn't necessarily need, you don't need all that money to support the
Sure it is. You got people, you got pensions, you got guys, you got directors, you need all that.
Oh yeah. They all need their cut. Let's talk briefly about
my guys. My guys have said, while all of our noses are pointed to China, they should be pointed to the Middle East. That's where the danger is.
There's some interesting stuff going on there. This is very sudden, and I don't know what I haven't seen, and nobody's seen, as far as I know, the intel that indicates that there's some kind of increased Iranian activity. The question I've got is whether...
You mean the intel the British say is all BS?
No, the question I've got is whether we are moving to preempt what appears to be direct Iranian action, or are we moving to provoke some type of Iranian reaction, which we'll then respond to, or are we just... is this else? I mean, my understanding from what I've read is that we got intel that they were about to do something.
The British say that's all BS.
Well,
according to the news yesterday.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that
we would get that news.
We would see an honest response out of them either.
Yeah, I understand.
Let me put it this way: what we are doing is undertaking an extraordinary expense. If we didn't think the intel was good, we're either undertaking an extraordinary expense for nothing, or there's another reason why we're doing this.
If Turkey turns, which it looks like they're in the process of at least attempting to do, I looked at the map yesterday, Lou, for the first time 2 years ago. And you got Russia, you got Iran, and you got Turkey. If they're moving to the other side, what in God's name are we doing with a battle group in the Persian Gulf? Talk about surrounded.
Well, first is to a certain extent is access to oil and access to energy. Now it's less of a problem for us now because of fracking, but we have allies in that area that we're aligned with. We have a number of other economies that are dependent on that access to that revenue source, and so it may and just from a regional hegemony issue, we want to prevent Iran from establishing an Islamic state or an Islamic caliphate that is going to project attacks has projected attacks against U.S. interests. So the question is, do you allow that to fester until it gets so big you can't ignore it, or do you respond directly? We also have the Israelis who are fighting Iranian proxies on their borders. We have the Saudis who are fighting Iranian proxies.
I'm not going to put them in the same class, but with this new leader in Saudi, I'm not so sure there's much to pick there, Lou.
Well, let me put it this way. One of my classmates, maybe 15 or 20 years ago, said the smartest thing we're doing right now in the Middle East is basically allowing this Sunni Shiite schism within Islam to weaponize, and let the Sunni and Shiite factions, blow each other up, kill each other off, whatever. Provide, the Shiites are arming the Iranians, and they're arming themselves to they're arming themselves to deal with whatever their expansionist interests are. The Sunnis are the Saudis and others, and so we'll counterbalance the Sunnis or counterbalance the Shiites with the Sunni interests.
We've had a lot of luck with that in the last
century.
That's
what we're seeing here.
We had a lot of luck with that in the last century, this concept of a limited war.
Well, I mean, this isn't limited war. This is, we're going to let these people slug it out with each other. It'll be significant, you know, for them, but we're not going to fight the battle.
How did that work out in 1918 and 1941?
Well, we weren't fighting proxy wars then.
Spanish-American War?
Direct conflicts.
Spanish-American War, we were all involved. Everybody was involved in that one. I mean, right?
No, but I mean that was not a proxy fight. We weren't engaged in slugging it out through proxies then. And so the question is what are we doing? We sent four B-52s there, which really is not a very significant strike force. If in fact we're signaling anything other than don't do this to Iran.
We got 30 seconds, Lou.
We got a carrier group.
Would you like to be that captain?
On the carrier group?
Yeah.
The Navy kind of breeds for guys who are up to the challenge or are interested in a challenge like this. So this guy getting selected to do this, yeah, this is a big deal for him. This is what they train for.
Right, but when we first did that years ago, maybe 25, 30 years ago, all we did was say, you never put a battle group in a place where there's only one way out. And we've been doing it ever since. Anyway, we'll talk about more next week, buddy. S&P futures up 9, NASDAQ futures up 20. We got two of our earnings reports, came out with those stocks up. We'll be right back, Mr. Fari Hamzy.
By the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTIsecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTIsecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Out. Mr. Fari Hamzy. She's Jay-Z on the board. SP Futures now down up 8.25. And NASDAQ Futures up 14.75. We've been up pretty much all morning. So, are you going to get convicted, go to jail, write a book, how much you love the president, and get a full pardon, Fari?
You talking to me?
Yeah.
You talking to me?
Yeah.
What do you mean, how much I love him? Why?
Because if you wrote a book, how much you loved him, you get a full pardon for whatever you might have done.
Oh, no, no. First, I don't need a pardon, A. If you get a pardon, you need a pardon, right?
Well, not necessarily.
I think my writings are very clear, very consistent for the last 2 years. I remember, he lost my vote as a Republican. He lost my vote when he fired Comey because that's obstruction of justice, however you look at it. I don't care if Mueller finds it or doesn't. I find it, and that's what matters. And so that's it. That was it. Now, of course, that was just the beginning of the avalanche. Now we got 20 plus investigations.
Yeah, we got.
And they're still fighting on the first one. Imagine the other 19 hit, including NYAG, which there's no way out for him. I mean, as it's actually debatable whether if they can indict a sitting president from a state level. So, well, it's going to be. Listen, he's a lame duck president. Nothing is going to happen.
But he's going to get in.
And to the effectiveness, and then you have a choice. 2 years nothing happens or 6 years nothing happens. And either way, the end result is an orange jumpsuit. So, for him. And for us, lame duck presidency, at best.
Well, but...
Unless Steve Bannon comes through.
But he can see he started... He
will quit.
He can start an awful lot of... He can start wars. He can do all kinds of... I had my phone, talking about phones ringing. I don't know if yours lit up yesterday when they came out with that tweet about the tariffs, the auto tariffs, and the market turned around like 60 points.
Yeah.
Didn't
get any calls, but I'm in the chat room. So it rolls up. Yeah.
But I'm saying everybody's like,
talking about this,
how crooked
and
are
so
these people?
And my question usually is, because you see the price in the news, is what happened, as you say in Korean? WA is space.
Yeah.
H-A-P-O-N.
What happened
in Korean? So because we were so close with Korea.
They also say that on the south
side. It's North Korea.
Yeah.
And so there were a few suggestions. Obviously, the last one was the tariff thing, which seemed to be the move. But listen, it's an impulsive presidency. It's on the White House is under siege. And then he is the greatest gift. We thank him every day. Look at my postings on Facebook or on Twitter. He's the greatest gift to day traders. We've never had this much volatility.
So get a load of this. In 2015, Trump tweeted out a link to one of Black's columns and said, with the title, Trump is the Good Guy. What an honor to read your piece. Is one of the truly great intellects and my friend I won't forget. And he pardoned him yesterday, so that's good. He didn't forget.
Yeah. As I said, it's a very corrupt presidency. And more will come out. He messed up... He probably ruined the $400 million that he gave him. Most likely, we'll see that. And we'll see how much overpriced real estate he sold to Saudis and Russians. Yeah, it's a mess, and he knows it. That's why now all of a sudden he's becoming very protective. Before he said he could have my taxes when there was no pressure. or they weren't close. Now, well, no, you can't do that.
Well, you know,
he wobbles back and forth on every issue. You know why? There's no spine in him. All he wanted to, actually, he wasn't sure if he wanted to win. Now he doesn't know what to do. This is a lesson to all of us. We can't have somebody too rich, or claim to be rich, or act like to be rich. Or at least managing the, maybe not net worth is not very high, but as a manager of a lot of assets, that means there is an impact to him. Because he, some policies...
Well, I think that...
That's one issue. Two, we have to have transparency. Three, you got to have some governance experience. At least some level. At least be a mayor.
You gotta
be a governor of, I don't know, Montana or some, you know, dubious... governor of Hawaii or something. You know, maybe you manage, you know, about 300,000 people, 500,000 people. Nothing he has done. So, what's this? I think they say that at peak Trump organization was like under 20 people. So.
Well, I think the positive, you know, always, well, once in a while, even I like to look at the positive.
Yeah.
I think that
I'll pour you a scotch while you're doing that.
Yeah. If we're willing to look, I had a little bit of experience I use the term a slime ball. That was like the Manafort Flynn kind of guys. The guys that went from country to country and found what they could steal with no real home. Those kinds of people. And I don't remember what you call them. They used to call them carpetbaggers or scalawags or something.
Gypsies. So
they're all Isle of Man, Monaco kind of people. They all have this alleged international tax, incredible expertise, and they can maneuver your money from back and forth from one place to the other. And there's a lot of stuff going on in the world like that. So I would hope that maybe some people that are somewhat reflective in this country, and we do have some, will shine the light on something like that. That how many Manaforts are there out there, for God's sake?
Oh, yeah.
But this thing about his taxes, and the thing that picks up on that is what I would like to see the light shown on, for lack of a better term, is, you know, we write this article, and I'd like to see the American people. You know, hopefully, I'd like to see more of them listen, because we have some people in here on the show that everybody should say, I mean, immediately, no matter who you are or wherever you are, certainly if you're a listener to this show, you immediately should say, with a number like $1 billion, which should pop right to the tip of your tongue, is, wait a minute. The dude didn't have $1 billion to lose. How did he lose $1 billion?
Yeah, I
know. So, because in any other industry, I mean, if you start out on the trading floor, Farah, if you start out trading like a madman as one of your clients, whatever it is,
you're done.
And you take out a clearing firm. Some idiot lets you be short 90 bazillion calls. The thing gets taken over, and you lose $30 million. Well, guess what?
You're done.
No, but I'm saying if your account,
but nobody will touch you again.
That part I get. That's not where I'm going with this.
Okay, go ahead.
If you had plunked $500,000 into the Fari account,
right,
and now the account's out $30 million. You don't get a $30 million tax loss. You get $500,000 because that's what you had to lose. The rest was not yours to lose. So how is it now in your next business you actually make $30 million, you have to pay taxes on it? When the other 30 wasn't yours to lose.
And then where did you get that 52 or whatever?
But I'm
59
saying,
million or 52.9?
Only in real estate.
Income?
Yeah, but only in real estate.
But how much money you need to have on the table to get that kind of income?
Oh, sure.
What liquidity you want? It was interest income. So you need to have cash somewhere, loaned it to somebody, you got an interest income.
Right. Or
interest income from depreciation. Interest income is having money you loaned.
I think, or you could do something sneaky, in that somehow you got the loan, and then you loaned it to your place, and they paid you more, and you paid some kind of a scheme where you're in the middle.
You know, but do the math.
Yeah.
At whatever interest rate you want to look at. If you're looking at 10%, that would be $500 million of capital. He never had that liquidity.
But
have you seen his conversations with his, what do you call it, with his...
What I'm saying, Fred, that's why...
Guys who are running the casinos?
That's why I want to see how people get in the middle. They might have granted him the loan the second time, and he turned around and loaned it to the casino. So he has interest coming in one place and out the other.
But listen. There are conversations that they have, people saying... We had $3 million in cash at Taj Mahal. Things were getting rough. He asked us to send $1.5 million to him personally, immediately. That day, wire. That's how those companies got killed. because he siphoned out so much of his personal life. DJT, the stock, look at it, went to zero. No white knight showed up.
Well, that's...
Look, hold on, let me finish. At some point, you and I know there's some intrinsic value, okay, of a company. That means you get to that point, the vultures or the bottom feeders show up. Nobody showed up in this case. Went to zero. DJT, go to your trade station or whatever you use, interactive, put the GAT, look at the stock, went to zero. Nobody wanted to step in. Now, while that the stock was losing money and not earning, he was still paying himself $40 million a year.
Well,
this is a con man.
What do you think that the pardon for Conrad Black is? Conrad Black was accused and went to jail for the same thing, taking money from his shareholders.
Right.
So, of course, Trump being...
Who pardoned him? I forget.
Trump, yesterday.
Well, Conrad Black?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
No, you didn't see that?
I'm on out of the news loop. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the same thing that you described Trump was doing, he was doing. Trump thinks that's perfectly fine. If it's your place, it's your money. If you're the president, the AG is your personal attorney. I mean, when the guy can look in a mirror and see the entire city of Chicago behind him and only sees himself. It looks to me.
I see. I know who this guy is now. Okay, I see his picture. Yeah.
He's a Canadian guy.
Yeah. Oh, my God. There's a never end to this.
There's never end. No, it never ends.
Yeah.
It gets worse by the day.
And then the biggest problem we really have is the election issues. And he has done nothing about it.
Because he won.
Chiefs.
Because
he has done nothing about protecting us. This is the fight for survival of democracy.
Well, I hope it's not that bad. But there's something to
agree with. Really?
I hope
6 years of this?
All right, so we see that.
I don't think so.
All right, so far we've got, we flipped from on Friday from being down a boatload to being up, which is a 60-point move.
I would watch for 50 bar, okay? I know where you're heading. Look at SPX at 50 bar. That's a huge test, which is 2864. That's about 14 handles above, plus 400 for today. A change of 14, we're at 7 right now in the futures. Okay? So the delta is the same. So between the cash and the future right now. So if you get, now the future's not open. I mean, cash is not open. But the futures are open during RTH and we hit plus 14, watch out. Because we close at 28.51, right? On the cash, the 50 bar is that. Now, if we falter there, this is a play from October. You can do analog from October. That's how that whole thing started. And we never recovered the 50 bar until middle of January. So we went 3 months of downdraft. Yeah, as a matter of fact, the next time we punched through and held it. Punched through and held it. That means at least a close above it. Of the 50 bar then is January 18th. And the failure happened on 10th of October. This is the same pattern coming up. It is a previous one. Running up, making a new high, sigma levels are plus 2, plus 3, then a crack shows up. Then we drop, go below 50 bar, come back from underneath and fail. And then went down.
Well,
and then next level, a test, is 2776. Again, on SPX cash, that's a 200 bar. If that happens, you know what's happening next. Death cross is coming. That means when the 50 bar catches up, remember we're out of phase, half cycle, moving averages versus cash. So when that comes up, which happens January, December 1st, then everybody and his brother has to sell. All the, mutual fund guys line up and sell nonstop. And then that's the December we had. December was one of my best months in several years. You have no idea how much we love Trumpkin, the Trump and Trumpkins on this issue, because it has injected nonstop volatility for us.
What do you make of?
Forget the investors. Investors are screwed. Jay-Z, please plug your ears. In Latin, we have a name for that. It's called No Vaselino.
Yep. See, We have a somewhat of a technical question for you. What,
please.
I'm looking at the
I should answer it in Latin or English?
No, the fabric of the market. I was mentioning to David a little bit about how historically you look at volatility, it's always close to close. Mm-hmm. And yet something is kind of weird in the last few days. And I don't know how to, I have no idea how to put my finger, my thumb on it or whatever. I know, like you, the volatility, especially since I have my people all protected, you know, right. We have puts on everything, that when it moves up and down and you can maybe roll these things if it gets to the extremes, you actually can be positive or make money while it's moving because you actually can trade in there a little bit, but it doesn't happen all the time. But the, but the point being is when you see a day like Friday, where mm-hmm. we're down a bunch like all day, all of a sudden something happens and we flip 60 and then we stop. And then the next day, we were down 85 spoos on Monday. I'm going to say, how long is the trading day? 6 hours. We must have been within 40 cents of the mean for 6.5 out of 7 hours. We're all of a sudden we go down, and all of a sudden somebody from somewhere anoints that it down 82 is the number, like not 80, not 84, but 82 is the number. And we sit there, and there isn't a trade anywhere for seemingly forever. Then all of a sudden we leak up a little on the close, a little short cover, and close down 77. Then the next day we have, we're up. So I see every stack in the Dow and every stack in the Dow Industrials and Transportation all one way, which you very seldom see. Then the next day they're all the other way. Mm-hmm. It's like this total futures denominated market, or tweets slash futures, where individual stocks aren't really moving up and down at all. Today we got a couple because of earnings, but by and large the market is just moving as the market, as the tweet turns. I don't know that that's, I don't know how healthy it is for, I don't, I can't
believe it's not healthy at all. Here's what I do so you realize. Two issues. A, on volatility, I look at 30 minutes of a VIX spread. Okay? 30 minutes bars of VIX spread versus ESM, versus the ES June contract. Because you have to rotate those, and the VIX spreads are 3 months, so you need to deal with D and lead. So tomorrow, near the close, I'm going to switch to July and October. Right now we're running, I'm running May and August. I'll move it to June versus September. So long June, short September. Right now we're long on paper, long May. Short August, okay? So that's one thing I look at. That's one. Two, on the trading screen, I look at three stocks next to NQ. I predominantly trade NQ. It's Microsoft, Amazon, and Apple. And I try to put them on the same bar interval. That means if I switch one, if I go to 10 minutes, everything goes to 10 minutes. So you got to be on a sync, right? Okay? And why those three? Because market cap. If you do an automated market cap calculation, you'll see in real time. You see these three are leading everything. And you'd see, we don't, actually, one could make this hypothesis that we don't move, the NQ doesn't move until at least Amazon moves. That correlation is very high, okay? So if you put some Sigma channels on them, you could see when Amazon is coming to a trough or a peak and it wants to reverse. That's when you have to do something with your NQ. Now, once we get all three in the same direction, like late yesterday, I would say, I'll give you a timeline here. It's like a rocket ship. About 10:30, 11 o'clock yesterday. When you get that time zone yesterday, Eastern time, it's a rocket ship. Why? Do all hitting on the same cylinders.
We don't have a standing order anywhere, Ferry. If we move one way, we just move. I mean, there's nobody in the way.
But before it, no, I'm talking about transition. Before that, I'm talking about minutia here. Maybe 5 minutes, 15 minute charts, 10 minute charts. You'll see one is moving, the other two are not. They're negating, okay? But when all three start, that's the beginning of the move. And then you see the move coming. Remember, zero lag. We want to be ahead of the market. You gotta know what market is that wants to do ahead. Once you see it's moving, once it's on the chart, it's rear mirror anyway. Our job is to predict what we're gonna see from a front windshield, not what's in the rear view mirror. And that's just the two I use. Watch those three companies, Microsoft, Amazon, and Apple, but make sure they're the same bar interval, so you're not mixing apples and oranges. When all three start moving at the very beginning, yes, and then it will continue. Then they're all going to move together for a long time. But that first instance that rolls over, you better get on the right track, right side of a move, because it's going to be with vengeance. Remember, NQ trades unlike ES. It doesn't go back and fail. It's like a crude. It's very directional. So it's if you're going to lose, you're going to know fast you're going to lose money. It won't kill you with 1,000 cuts. It's a guillotine. It takes your head off.
Ferry, what I don't know if you're out of the news a little bit. Trump's going crazy against this
morning.
How Huawei or whatever the
oh yeah that's right You know, in a way, I agree with him on that. Two things I agree with what he did yesterday. I said on Facebook too, because you got to look at this case by case. You can't just say just because he's a bad guy or he's a corrupt or whatever, everything he does is wrong. No,
well,
on Huawei, I agree. Huawei, whatever it's called. On a 5G, we got to be a little bit behind that, so be it. You got to understand the yellow race, the China. The world domination is their goal. And if they can get, we already have privacy issues. So if they get any more stronger on those, on electronic stuff, there's nothing to hold them. So I agree. The other one was the immigration, making it merit-based. Get away much from family requirement and get more into merit-based and skill-based. That's why I got my green card. I went to labor department, labor certificate. They advertise, they interview. You obviously have to do something unique and something the country needs, okay? Then you get priority. Otherwise, you have to make sure you're not displacing a U.S. worker. But I agree with that. And I don't believe it that we're there at this point where we're on it, not how it was a couple hundred years ago, but where we are now. Given our issues, the pollution, the taxes, the deficit and all that, we can't be the dumping ground for every asylum seeker. And how do you trust
people,
good or not good, in terms of paperwork and all that? Who knows whether they're criminals or not?
By the way,
what's more important, what do they know?
People that own yachts thought that way 200 years ago. You're not new.
Exactly. But my point is, how do they know if they're criminal or not? But hey, what's your degree? Put them, give them a test. Have them, remember, before you get labor certificate, you have to work. They give you H-1 visa. Under H-1 visa, they know you're real or not. Yeah, you get at least one year of H-1 visa. H-1 visa, you can't just claim I have a piece of paper that I'm a college graduate. No. They're going to put you to work.
Right, so
and there are certifications you have to file in. If you don't, the employer gets into trouble. It's a loopback system. So you can't cut it. You can't, fool everybody. And it's not a 5-minute thing. Yes, it takes about 2 years. Yeah, and yes, you won't get promotions because the employer also knows you want your labor certificate. Yeah, there's no incentive to move you. Why? If you change jobs, even in the same company, because you went to a different different department, you have to reapply. And by then, your H-1 visa may be expiring. There's no guarantee they're going to renew the your
H-1. Companies love that.
You make some sacrifice, they make some sacrifice, but they review
the people
you
that don't sacrifice
carefully and quietly and see, hey, if this is the right person for us or not, for this country. That's what they're supposed to be. In L.A., what I call Los Angeles, I don't know, 80%, 90% were based on marriages. And most of them were, some of them were fictitious.
All right,
when you start
talking about that,
a lot of people got caught.
All right, when you talk about that, I want to talk more about this highway thing, but you talk about that type of thing, you become an indentured servant of that company. I don't need any more indentured servants for Google. These people, I got
to there has to be, I understand that, but you've got to go through that. I have some people who actually worked for me at Northrop.
They were
in the middle of their labor certificate. We needed them. They were qualified. They could show day to day.
I understand where you're coming from.
We needed them. And the defense, as a defense country, we need it for the country. So what you do is you can't promote them, but you give them extra, annual raises, maybe slightly more, or give them a little bit overtime. There's some loose areas you can play with. And it's only for 2 years.
Or
a year and a half. But you gotta go through a cycle. Right, I believe it's faster now.
Maybe next week.
Because there's a lot more automation.
Maybe next week I'll debate you.
LA was a very, very busy immigration office. That's why.
Maybe next week I'll debate you regarding giving Google an indentured servant competing against somebody here But in the meantime, the question about this Huawei, I have a client, maybe several, that know a lot about this area, and I think you do as well. If we all of a sudden don't like him, and the president doesn't like him, now, who the hell knows who he's being put up to do this? Because I give the man no trust whatsoever that it's not just somebody else in some other business he happens to like that is pissed off. What I understand, and again, I was told this, and I'm asking you to either confirm or deny, Huawei owns an awful lot of the patents regarding the 5G.
They owns a lot of what?
The patents.
They probably do.
And now,
also, they're a big user of Intel and Qualcomm chips.
All right, so now
huge.
Okay, now do we because they were quick enough to get them when our guys were asleep? Are we going to take the patents away from them? Are we going to give them to Trump's buddies? What are we going to do? I'm not a big fan.
No, these are U.S. patents or patents in China?
U.S. patents, from what I hear.
I don't know. That's a good point. Here's the problem we have with this president. He reacts to the last person he talked to. That's a very bad way of management style. Rather than, yes, he does have a lot of different advisors. I understand that. That's probably a good thing. But he usually reacts to the last person he talked to on the same subject. That's very dangerous. That's why you see all these whipsaws. One AD is one after another.
Why would we have let...
So I don't know. How do you want to gauge that?
Why would you grant...
What is he going to say today? Is he going to hold to it tomorrow?
Why would we grant all these patents to a foreign country in the first place?
I don't know. We don't know when they were granted either. Was it under Obama or under him? But
remember, we
had a bromance with China too for a while.
Well, I would say that, Farhi, we could have five shows in a row. Well, I couldn't bring my guy in who taught me all this stuff from Notre Dame because he's dead, but virtually every big patent in this country has been stolen. you could get rid of it.
That's another thing.
Yeah. Farhi, we got to talk about it next week, buddy. We're out of time.
IP anyway.
We're out of time. SP Futures up 8. NASDAQ Futures up 675. Have a good week, buddy. Make some money.
Have a great week, sir.
Talk to you next week. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here in our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom. She's Jay Z on the board. He's David Animal in S&P Futures. Now up 10%. The housing starts rose a little bit more than expected in April. We had the retail sales numbers yesterday that were lousy, but now the housing start number today is pretty good. So the numbers have been kind of all over. I'm going to say slightly to the downside from people expected, but, you know, who the hell knows the expected part. NASDAQ, I'm going to say S&P Futures up 10.75. NASDAQ Futures up 14. Dow Futures up like 90. Cisco and Walmart gain on their earnings, even though the earnings are all weaker than people thought they were going to be this time last year, but now because they're beating expectations, everything's okay. This is the way we do with that stuff. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 67.6%, FTSE up 13.2%, CAC around up 10.2%, so moderately to the upside there. Asia, Nikkei down 125.6%, Shanghai up 7.6%, and we've got Hang Seng up 6%, call that flat, like flat black. We got oil up again, now up 86 cents. 62.88 is the Middle East tensions, whatever, they'll continue to move up on a tension pole, if there's such a thing. Brent up 98 cents, 72.75, so that spread is $9.87. So it's higher than it's been, went down to 7.50. Natural gas, 2.58. Wow. It's down, actually down. Arbob, 2.05, so it's racing back up over $2. And we've got gold down 330, 1294, silver down 1 cent. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. How much rain are we supposed to get tonight? A lot?
I don't have the direct inches, but it actually says there's only a 50% chance of rain tonight, so.
Really?
But I've heard on other places that it's supposed to thunderstorm.
Yes.
But the internet says only 50% chance.
Well, there you go. Believe in everything you read on the internet.
No, not everything.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:35. Weather in Chicago today is partly... Well, looks like we lost David, but I'll answer that call in a sec. Weather in Chicago today is partly cloudy. Expect rain later in the evening today. Today's high is 78 with a low of 50. Phoenix is mostly cloudy with a high of 90 and a low of 61. In baseball, the Cubs lost the Reds 6-5. Sox were off, and the Diamondbacks beat the Pirates 11-1. No accidents. Back to you.
Yeah, we've got a little bit of a bounce on these housing numbers. Of course, who knows if that's really the bounce. I mean, there might be some tweak coming someplace. Anyway, I think this Huawei thing is going to be very interesting to see how it all works through. David, how are you?
I'm fine. I don't know. I'm not getting good reception on the phone. Can you hear me?
Yes. You're actually okay. Loud and clear.
All right. Speak loudly because for whatever reason, I'm not hearing you very well.
I think it's probably your phone. Do you have a landline? No.
It is a landline.
Really?
And I switched to a different landline, but, you know, it's battery operated, so you know how that goes.
Yes. We're talking a little bit about, we haven't talked about in a while. We haven't heard the word Boeing in about 3 weeks. What's the deal there? I mean, these guys are still hanging in there. Stock's still 348. I got trading up 240 this morning. How many?
They had an FAA, panel discussion in front of, a subcommittee of Congress, I don't know exactly which one, and it was relatively positive. They said, Boeing did not appear, but the FAA did, and they said that, you know, the software's coming along and should be approved in a couple weeks, and once it's approved, the indications are that several countries will go back to the MAX airlines.
We have a
aircraft.
Our man Dan Howe, president of PTI Securities. One summer he worked for an outfit that made more donuts and honey buns than any place on earth, David.
Okay.
There's a place on Union. It's an incredible fact. They've been written up on every paper here in Chicago. If ever you go to any of those food trucks and everything and you see the honey buns and all the different rolls and donuts,
right.
It's probably made in that building. It's the most incredible thing you've ever seen where they make the donuts and they run around the conveyor belts over the place to cool off and then down. Anyway, it's incredible.
Do they have a storefront where at the end of the day they sell like a dozen for $2 or something?
I think they used to, yeah, the ones that didn't go out in the morning.
Because I have some friends who live on Rush Street, and there's a place they go to like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and whatever's left over for the day, they said they're not stale. They just put them in a microwave for a few seconds, and they're delicious. Yep. And they get like two dozen for $2 or something like that.
Well, there's those that are allegedly experts on donuts that claim they don't taste as good as you're going to get till the second day.
Right.
Anyway, for some reason, stacking the honey buns and stuff into the little cartons, there's never been a machine, or at least up until that point there wasn't, that did it properly without smushing them. So that had to be done by hand.
Okay.
So these things would come at you at the end of the line. So Dan starts out, and there's like three Hispanic ladies that are like 5'2", 180 pounds. Maybe they make that 280 pounds. And he's on, and he's on the line, and he's just starting, and he has no idea how the hell to do this, right? And he says, but the line keeps coming. And if you're not really good at it, all of a sudden they start dumping on the ground and they have to close, you know, shut the line down. Everybody stares at you. Well, after, you know, like a day or so, he got good enough to where he was able to stack them fast enough. And every time I think of this Boeing situation with them pushing 42 planes off the end of the assembly line every month that can't get sold, I keep thinking of the honey buns falling on the floor. What are they doing with these things? I mean, how many are we up to? 300 planes? Where the hell? Do they fly them somewhere and park them? Do they have room there? I mean, for God's sake. How do you maintain the things? How do you make sure that you got to open the doors every day, especially if it gets hot? What are you doing? I mean, I don't see how.
Well, you don't. I mean, do you know that none of them are getting sold?
They can't deliver them. They can't fly them anywhere.
Okay. I don't know the answer to that. But I think the stock, for what it's worth, I mean, 2 days ago or 3 days ago at the lows, I mean, there were stochastics, which for the listeners is a measure of price momentum oscillators. They got down to 1 on the short-term oscillator, 1%, 9 on the longer term. Downside extension, or what the talking heads like to say is oversold. I hate the term. That was the ultimate on a quality stock. And I mean, I'm not saying this is it, then pick a bottom. And full disclosure, I mean, for customers, I own a very small, like 25 shares. So it's not like I'm real bullish or whatever, but I think I'm not saying the bottom's in, maybe one more poke to the downside, but you punished it technically to beyond what I've ever seen.
But it's not even down to where it was before this, 6 months before this thing even started. I guess what I'm saying is, it's very difficult.
I mean, I'm not saying it can't go lower.
I agree with you. What I'm saying is, we've come into the situation, we talk about investing and trading, and we actually have talking heads and people talk about, you know, should we be socialist, should we be competitive? There's no such thing as competitive when it comes to Boeing. They got their nose so far up the ass of government that they gave them, how many billion-dollar contract for B-52s, just like tied them over on a 737?
Well, beyond that, I mean, they don't really have much in the way of competition either.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Airbus, I mean, there's a few manufacturers in Asia, but nobody puts out a product like they do.
Well, no, I mean, there's no way Airbus can pick up the slack for 57 737s a month. I'm sure they would love to be able to. But my point is, I spoke earlier and I spoke out of turn. I don't know for a fact, David. I'm going to say I'm 80% sure. I don't know for a fact that if you wanted to, you couldn't show up and buy one of these things and fly it to your home country and ground it there. I don't think they're delivering them, but I'm not absolutely positive about that. In other words, if you were Alaska Air, could you go down and pick up your delivery and get some kind of a one-time shot from the FAA to drive it to Alaska and put it in a hangar? I don't know that you can't do that, to be honest with you. I suspect you can't, but I don't know. I don't know either.
And I mean, let's say you're, you know, Canada. I mean, yeah. I would guess that they still have plenty of planes in Seattle. Could you not drive it over the border? I mean, I don't know. It's not a rhetorical question. I just don't know the answer.
Yeah, I mean, I get the feeling that there's been no deliveries, but I honestly don't know that for a fact.
But even if you're right, I mean, the backlog, which purportedly continues to build, so let's say it takes another 3 months. Let's say the software is approved in 2 weeks, like this gentleman on the FAA, you know, said. And for whatever reason, they have to distribute all the software and make it, you know, part of the initial package so it's not optional, and they do the training or whatever. Let's say it's even 6 months. So they back up, you know, 300 planes, you know, that are newly produced, and they got another 200 on the ground. There's orders for them as far as the eye can see.
Oh, I understand. I don't think anybody really thinks. I mean, I don't matter. You could be the biggest bear on earth. I don't think anybody thinks, I mean, I sure don't, that 4 years from now, you know, other than remembering this, that people lost their lives, you know, it remains to be seen how much Boeing ends up paying for all this, that Boeing is going to be very healthy. I mean, otherwise, we have an export import bank just for Boeing now, for God's sake. I mean, we're darn near for Boeing. I mean, we've become very, very favored. And we were talking, to talk a little bit of, you know, cerebral economics or whatever you want to call it, maybe behind economics. I don't know that we can even have the discussion anymore regarding capitalism and socialism, David, because we're such a combination of both, and crony capitalism and fascist capitalism, where there's, you know, three companies in an industry, and they're also tied to government. You can't get their nose out of the, you know, the oat sling, or whatever they used to call it for horses. I don't know. I don't know how even define this. I don't know how you can even have that conversation. Really, do you? I mean, clearly, yeah. Airlines is not a competitive industry, even though they claim they are. Because, you know, who gets to buy the most cocktails at the Paris show and shove the most shrimp in a guy trying to get him to get 737s versus the Airbus? But by and large, going against one guy isn't all that tough. You know,
right.
I mean, I'm sure they think it is. And it probably, if you had that job, it would be tough. But in terms of economically, let's see, they have two choices. That's not the same as having 50 choices or 20 right. choices or whatever. So what do you make? What'd you make of the swing yesterday with the we'll worry about the tariff later swing that flung us 35, 40 spoo points?
Yeah, I look at it from a technical standpoint. I mean, some of the oscillators and the indexes were getting extended. They weren't that extended. There actually was more room to the downside, but market found a way, you know. I mean, it's unfortunately it's the 20 handles, 30 handles, even 40 handles on S&Ps, you know, are two tweets away. You get, you know, Trump saying, you know, talks are going forward and they're going to meet Xi at the next G20, and, you know, Pompeo is going to go to Europe and, you know, delay auto tariffs, and Mnuchin says, you know, I'm going to China to talk. And that's 40 handles in the S&P.
Well, I wouldn't care so much if they didn't go out of their way on Friday to say it all broken apart. You know, I mean, to me, to not have a room in the White House where six guys are trading this, I can't even imagine that, David. I mean, they're creating the... I mean, somebody other than me has got to pick up that these are tradable events.
Right.
I mean...
No, I mean, I'm sure... I mean, I think the whole market is... I mean, you know, this thing with, you know, Huawei, and, you know, we have an emergency, and I'm not saying we don't, you know, and whatever. So we won't name Huawei, but anybody who, you know, has a backdoor in their software is going to be banned, and we're going to try and get the Europeans to go along with us. That, you know, I'm surprised the market is taking that in. I mean, I do see some, you know, trade-sensitive stocks, you know, like Broadcom and Apple and whatever down, but I'm surprised it's not causing more damage today.
Well, you have a son. It's a son, right? Not the daughter, who was the patent attorney.
Well, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for 7 years he practiced intellectual property, including some international, but he's now does due diligence for a sports venue firm.
Okay. So, you know, once a patent attorney, always a patent attorney. It's like, you know, being a Marine.
Well, he runs into it when he's doing due diligence, you know, for stadiums and the like, which is what he does.
Well, what are we going to do if one of the couple of the clients that I have are actually correct, and they, one of them was a listener, actually, not a client, the other one was a client, and say that Huawei has the majority of the patents regarding 5G. Can we just cut them out? Say you don't have them anymore?
I don't have any. I'll have to ask him that. I really don't have any idea.
I mean, I wouldn't know what to say about that. I think
the question is, did they get them? Did they develop them? Did they steal them? I have no clue as to the correct answer on that.
From what I understand, they recognized where everybody wanted to go with this before somebody else, and got them early. I'll use the term legitimately. I don't know what that even means when it comes to a patent, but got them.
Especially in their language.
Yeah, got it the right way. Because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, all I know is that from what I learned in school, virtually every big patent that we know of was stolen. And now, how many people own 90 bazillion patents as soon as you get an invention? I've actually talked to, they were people who were looking for money, but I don't really raise money for people, but I kind of told their story to a couple of people and, you know, then just got out of it. But they had machines, for lack of a better term, that did specific testing for chemicals and things like that. And I, of course, was fascinated by the business, so you couldn't stop me from going to at least take a tour of the place. And I said, by the way, do you guys have a patent? Why would we want a patent? What do you mean? I said, the minute you put a patent out there, you tell everybody what you have, either somebody's going to say, they did it first, and the defense is all on you, or somebody who bought 5 million patents from somebody is going to say, without even looking at his, is going to say you're against these five things, even though we know we developed this whole thing for 40 years. It's been our machine, and so the amount of stealing and the amount of court cases and the amount of people doing that the whole system is pretty much shot. I think the only thing it really does, David, is Keep cause people to pay an exorbitant amount of money for drugs. I mean, I think that's what's left of the system. And that might be a very, glass half empty sort of view, but I don't know. Is there any truth to anything of what I said or not?
Again, I mean, I don't want to be flippant, but it's very complex. Each one's different.
Yep.
I mean, I know that my son Eric's firm, Alston and Bird, giving credit, they're out of Atlanta, but they did a ton of work on a lot of Nokia patents and got one of the very largest settlements that exists, $60 million, something like that. And it was very complex. It took years, and there was all the angles you're talking about. We had it first, or, geez, we cut this corner so it wasn't the same thing, so we were allowed to steal it, and this and that and the other. And it's just, there's no one answer because every case is different.
Well, I know that Kodak didn't invent the Brown camera. Brown Camera Country did, and they ended up with it. I don't think that Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone. I think not. I mean, name like everyone that's, I mean, I'm guessing Edison maybe did do the light bulb, but I don't know. But I mean, you know what I'm saying? But right now, if anybody were to immerse themselves in it, I know out of the 100%, I mean, your son probably knows 60%. I know 1%. The 1% I know, to me, is like, why are we even doing this? I mean, it's,
Well, and you wonder, I mean, and you bring up a valid point. I mean, Roku, and I don't own any shares at all, so full disclosure. But, you know, they have the TV streaming, and this bundle, that bundle, the other bundle, design your own bundle. And, you know, the stock is, you know, took a big hit from $65 to whatever, high 30s. Now it's, you know, 84, and they had the CEO and founder on last night. And, you know, we got every bundle, and everyone's cord cutting, and you can design your own, and, you know, just buy our box for $30 and design your own, or don't buy our box and buy it in a built-in smart TV, and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. I don't see what there is that Amazon couldn't copy, you know, or anyone else, Google or whatever, a platform to take packages, get relationships, and float it to the public. And you know, they have the wherewithal that they could circumvent any kind of, you know, intellectual property that Roku has. And I'm not long, I'm not short, but it just, I look at some of this stuff and it goes wild for a while and then cools off or somebody steals it.
Or it's so close and finally somebody sues and it's 15 years later, it seems like the thing comes to court, but nobody remembers what the hell the case is about. I mean, it's,
right.
Let's put it this way. I have a feeling that if we put a group of people together today to devise patent laws, especially in the drug area, it wouldn't be 17 years. That's like a long time now, David. I mean, it's,
right.
I mean, it's that's kind of a,
and this electronics thing, that Huawei is just, you know, one item. I mean, it's just semiconductors. I mean, they showed a thing with Tesla making their own chips, you know, which seem to border on a lot of stuff that NVIDIA is doing. And though NVIDIA has been in semiconductors and chips of all kinds and diversified forever, there was an implication that Tesla stole a lot of the intellectual property or infringed on it or cut this corner or whatever, but to make their own. And I mean, I don't think that Tesla has the money. They're always doing shelf offerings or whatever to fight NVIDIA if NVIDIA comes, you know, after them.
Well, shift gears here just a little bit. I've been kind of marveling the last 4 or 5 days, not that it's never happened before, it has. The idea that I look at my screen and every stock in the Dow 30 and in the transportation average are all either way down or way up in one tweet and they all flip. Is there, it seems to me, I don't know, we used to be able to get this report. You know, you probably still look at it, but I don't know where the hell I'd find it now. There used to be a percentage that came out every day of how much of the stock that traded on the exchanges was part of program trading. And, you know, it was 40% for a while, it was 45, and in some days it'd be 20, and in other days when it was all over the place, it might be as high as 60. I have to believe, David, it's got to be way up there now. I mean,
I agree.
I mean,
it segues back to what you were saying. 40 handles. I know for a fact that a lot of these black holes, dark holes, you know, algorithms, whatever, have, you know, senses that they catch a tweet, they have some keywords, and then they have the programs to buy or sell futures, and that's 20 to 40 handles on the S&P. I'm not saying every day, but if the keywords, you know, come six at a time or whatever, it's going to be don't stop buying the futures until we force everything up, or don't stop selling the futures until we force everything down.
Well, and you look at, say, the transportation areas, I'm looking straight at it. Actually, today there's only two stocks down on the Dow, the rest are up. So, I mean, we've got the same thing going today, even though the S&Ps are only up 8. What if, you know, all of a sudden we got a you know, a Friday where we're down whatever, and then we flip to the upside, and then on Monday, you know, we're just down a rat hole basically. Then Tuesday we're up piling halfway out of the rat hole. I mean, suppose you did love, and I'll just pick a couple stocks off my. Suppose you're a transportation junkie, and you love, you know, J.B. Hunt, you love JetBlue, you like Kansas City Southern, you like whatever. I don't even know what these symbols are. Delta Airlines, I know. Chesapeake. What if you know those now? They're all down 2.5%, like they were on Monday for a while, and then they came back and were down whatever 2%. When is it sort of safe to pick the one you want? Because if the same thing happens the next day, they're all down another 2.5%. And even though you might pick the, you know, the strongest dog in the fight, it doesn't matter if an asteroid lands on the dog fight. You know, I mean, it's right. I mean, they're both.
Well,
bad.
Yeah, I think in that particular situation, you either pick best of breed or quality, and, you know, maybe buy some puts, sell some calls, you know, and hedge it as a position. Or if you're really just trying to swing trade off whatever and get in front of the algorithms or even trail them, then you just buy the ETF and try and swing trade with that. I wouldn't try and pick you know, out of a basket of 20, one, unless you're pretty confident that that's the one, whether it's technically or valuation or whatever, as a position, and hedge it. But I wouldn't try and pick one, you know, off what you're saying.
Well, yeah, because it's, even if you pick the one that's 2%, 5% under where it should be, quote, should be trading, whatever the hell that means. If we get two more days of 2% down, now say it's Federal Express. I buy it at 172.54. I'm not going to do anywhere saying you should do that or not do that because I don't know any of it. But say, boy, you know, this thing's been going down, and I don't know, transportation's been getting its butt kicked. All of a sudden today, for instance, the spoos flip, and it's trading 170. Okay, I'm not saying that's going to happen either. I say, you know what? Here's my spot. I like that. That's my favorite one in here. It isn't, by the way, but say it was. And now we have three more days of down 2%, and next week it's down, it's at 160, even though now it's still the best dog in the litter. And now next week everything straightens out, and the rest of the things stay even, and it bounces back to 64. Well, I guess I'm vindicated that it was the best one, David, but I'm still down, right? You know, I mean, I almost need to do two things. I need to find out where the market's going to stop going down and pick the best stock. It's hard enough to do one of
those. Well, that's not trying to, you know, orient, you know, towards my way, but that is where the technicals come in. I mean, I'm not saying any, like I said, I own 25, I told 25 shares of Boeing, but I'm not, you know, in hindsight, it's easy. Oh, geez, you know, 3 days ago, the oscillators were 1 and 9. Did I buy it that day? No, I was in front of that, so I had to sit through a little losses, and now I'm, you know, doing okay. But that's where you have to just say, hey, look, if I'm going to try and catch a falling knife, such as Boeing or such as, you know, FedEx or whatever, how deeply undervalued, quote-unquote, or technically extended is it? My mind is you have to get these oscillators in the single digits before you really poke, especially if you're not trying to be diversified in an ETF. If you're trying to pick the one that has gotten beaten down enough, you have to use the technicals to say, hey, look, enough's enough.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm just saying the way the market...
And I don't know any other way because you could have said, you know, Boeing at 20 times earnings and growing at, you know, 22% a year was valuable at 390 or 360 or whatever. Well, hello, it's at 340.
Well, yeah, and it's anyway, David, thank you very much, buddy.
All right.
SP Futures still down, we're up 8.25. We're down from where we were in the top. NASDAQ's come down a little bit, up 275, which is down a bunch from where we came in, but still, almost every stock in the Dow is up. Walmart's up, Cisco's up. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.